you know what you actually sound like? Well, most of us might think so. That is, until we buy a new answering machine. You take your new digital answering machine out of the box. You're ready to record a message. You press record. You say, "Hi, this is Roger Love. I am the most interesting guy in the world. You want to meet me? You want to have a date with me? You want to come over and be my best friend?" Leave a message. And then you listen back, and it sounds like this.
"Hi. It's me. Why are you leaving a message?"
Beep. And you listen back and you think, "What a crummy recorder. That is the biggest piece of junk," and you do it again. "Hey, it's Roger. Please call me back." And you listen back and it still sounds like. And you say, "That's not me." Well, I'm sorry to say, that probably is you. You're just not used to hearing the way you actually sound like. So I want to talk to you about the 6 major distinctive vocal types that inhabit the throats of just about every individual on the planet. And I want to help you to recognize these and see where you and everyone you know fits into the scheme of things. I've always believed that most people have absolutely no idea what they sound like. When you speak, the sounds vibrate certain tissues and bones of the body. As those sounds ring and vibrate inside of you, it's difficult for you to separate the sounds from the actual feelings. You might think that your voice is strong and boomy with a ton of low, rumbly characteristics. However, that impression is often very different for those people who are outside of you simply listening to the sounds that are emerging out of your mouth and into the air. That version of yourself may seem stripped down or flat in compared with the richness that you feel yourself producing. On top of that, sound traveling away from you actually sounds completely different from sound coming towards you. Because of the gap between our inner perception and the listeners, I suggest that you always give yourself an objective ear by recording some of the exercises that I'm going to give you. You don't need anything with bells and whistles. You don't need anything fancy. Just get a tape recorder that gives you a true representation of what you actually sound like. Now, before I detail the 6 specific vocal types, I need to explain to you about a very important piece of vocal gadgetry that you have in your throat. It's called the larynx, or voice box. Understanding it and being able to manipulate it is a key factor in the success of altering some of the sounds that are going to come out of our mouths. Now, the larynx basically has 2 very important jobs in the body. First, it's the house for the vocal cords. The vocal cords live inside of it and are protected by it. Second, the larynx is part of the swallowing function. There are 2 holes in the back part of the throat, one for air and the other one for food and liquid. Well, when you swallow, the larynx comes up and seals off the air hole so that food and liquid can't go down the air hole and choke you. You understand what I'm saying? The larynx comes up as part of the swallowing function and seals off the air hole so that no food or drink can get down the air hole. Most people are still a bit confused as to where exactly their larynx is, and they've heard the term Adam's apple, so let me explain. Especially women, because it doesn't stick out as far on a woman. So let's go ahead and find out where your larynx really is. Put your index finger on your chin and slide it back down, all the way down your throat until you get to the first bump. That's the Adam's apple. And the larynx is the handball-sized object right behind it. Now keep your finger on your Adam's apple and swallow. You'll feel how it goes way above your finger and then comes back down. At certain times, that swallow, rise, block the throat motion may be a lifesaver, because none of us wants food in the windpipe. But when that happens at the wrong time, it cuts off the air passage and it stops you from producing great sounds. So the last thing in the world you want when you're speaking is for your larynx to come up and close off that air hole. When it closes off the air hole, your sound is drastically obstructed. To figure out if your larynx is rising too high and closing up your throat, let's try this. Put your index finger back on your Adam's apple and start to speak out loud about your favorite restaurant and all of the favorite menu items that you love to eat there. I love that pasta. It's so long and the spaghetti sauce is so tasty. Just talk about your favorite menu items from your favorite restaurant. Now, as you're doing that, I want you to pay attention to what your larynx is doing. If the larynx jumps substantially above your finger, as it did when you swallowed, that's way too much movement. The larynx is only allowed to move up and down between a quarter and one-third of an inch as you speak. Any more than that, and it starts to block the sound. A high larynx is one of the most common problems affecting speakers, but it's very simple to get the larynx into its proper position with a series of exercises I call low larynx exercises. And let me give you a quick hint of how easy it is for you to do that. Now, the exercise that I'm doing here is specifically designed to move your larynx down. As you imitate the sounds that I'm going to make, you should feel that your Adam's apple actually moves lower in your throat. Okay, so here's the sound. I say mum, normal, mum. Put your finger on your Adam's apple, mum. Now say mum, like Yogi Bear talks like this, and Rocky from the Sylvester Stallone movies talks like this. You kind of have to pretend like you have a cold and you can't really speak in your nose.
Mum, normal.
Mum, low larynx. So with that funny sound and your finger on your Adam's apple, which should be lower than it normally was, you're going to do this. Mum, 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 mum. Mum. Good, keep that funny sound. Don't think that it's silly. Mum. Because we already know it's silly, but it has good reason. Mum. Now don't do this. Mum. And sound normal on the top. Mum. Keep it funny on the top. Good. Couple more. Wonderful. Now, let's do the same thing for the women. Mum, keep it funny. Mum. Don't make it normal. Don't go mum. Wonderful. Once again, you're thinking, why in the world am I doing mum, pretending I'm a singer? And I say to you that the larynx has an amazing thing called sense memory. And once it gets used to staying down in its proper position, it'll stay there when you're not doing an exercise. So practicing that particular vocal exercise tells the larynx it's got to get used to staying lower than it normally does. So even when you're stressed or you feel pressured or you get louder, your larynx will remember the place that you put it because it has sense memory. As we go through each of the types, I want you to think first, is that me? And then second, write down a list of all the people you know who actually do have that problem. Learning to identify the types and sounds plays a major role in your ability to eliminate your own vocal flaws. In the particular part of the guidebook that is For this session, you'll see after every voice type, there's a specific place where you're going to make these lists. Now let's move on to the six types of voices, the first of which I call
the nutty nasal professor.
There's a lot of misconceptions about how and why our voices sound nasal. Many people can imagine that too much air is going into the nose, echoing around and giving their voices a nasal quality. And that's partially right. As you go higher in the range, a certain amount of air is supposed to be directed below the roof of the mouth, and a certain amount of air is supposed to be directed above the soft palate into the sinus area. I'm going to give you a tiny little anatomy lesson. Put the tip of your tongue right behind your front teeth and run it over the roof of your mouth. The hard section that you feel in the front, that's the hard palate. And the softer area toward the back part of the throat, you guessed it, that's the soft palate. Now, some nasal sounds come about when a speaker tightens the back part of his throat, which keeps the air from freely flowing into the mouth. And with that escape route blocked, unnatural amounts of air are directed above the soft palate into the nasal area. That produces the rather harsh, trebly nasal sound of
Jerry Lewis playing the Nutty Professor. The sound is blatantly obvious here, but many people are painfully close to it without even knowing it.
Could that be you? Try this test. Begin to count slowly from 1 to 10. When you reach the number 5, gently pinch your nostrils shut and keep on counting. Listen to me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. When you do it, pay attention. How do you sound on 5 through 10? Did the sound drastically change? It might surprise you to learn that there should be no drastic change after you pinch your nose. There's no huge shift when I reach the number 6. Why? Well, when you're speaking correctly, only a tiny amount of air goes into your nose at all. So when you pinch your nostrils, the amount of air that you're actually restricting should barely affect the way that you sound. And though I know you heard a slightly blocked sound on the numbers that contain an N, because you can't make an N with your nose closed, the rest of it sounded pretty normal. If you noticed a drastic change, it's a sure indication that you've got too much air going toward the nasal area. Practicing that low larynx exercise that I just gave you is the easiest way to reverse that nasal problem. So, as I said earlier, if this is your problem, make a little note of it. If it isn't your problem, write down a list of the people you know who actually fall into this category. The second voice type I affectionately call the Rocky Balboa, and it's the direct opposite of the nutty nasal professor.
It happens when we let too little air into the nose. Think of Sylvester Stallone as Rocky, with a low, blocked nasal sound that was most probably the result of one too many run-ins with a boxing glove.
Once again, I know my examples are extreme, but it's because I want you to easily recognize what I'm demonstrating. Now, unless you currently have a severe cold, your voice probably doesn't sound exactly like that. But towards the lighter end of that nasal spectrum, you might recognize something of yourself having a little bit of that blocked sound. It's entirely possible that you have mild, unwanted nasal tones in your voice and won't be aware of them until you hear your own voice played back to you. Even if you have a cold or horrible allergies, you can still use these exercises to get out of that nasal or blocked up sound. The exercises will still work, even if your physiology is fighting against you temporarily. So, right now, go back to that first recording we made with the tape recorder when we did that first short vocal evaluation in session 1. Listen this time specifically for the two nasal sounds we've just discussed.
The Nutty Nasal Professor.
And the Rocky Balboa.
If you're hearing them, you're not alone. Nasality is common because it's so easy to send too much or too little air into the nasal passages to begin with. That is, until your voice is completely aligned, which it will be by the time you're finished doing all of the vocal exercises. The goal is, when the voice and the physiology come together, bad habits don't usually happen. Okay, put the program on pause, go back to your guidebook, and write down a list of all the people that you think sound like the Rocky Balboa. Right now, you might find yourself getting stuck in one nasal place or another. Why? Well, one prominent reason is sound memory. Your brain remembers what you sound like every day, and it's constantly reassessing what the qualities of you are. It hears the sounds you make, and it basically tries to duplicate them the very next time you speak. So say you spend a couple of weeks with a cold. The brain begins to associate that plugged up sound with you and subtly prods you to hold on to that sound even when you can breathe again. The cold ends, but your voice still sounds nasal. Your brain is misguidedly telling you that this is what you sounded like yesterday, so I guess this is what you should sound like today. Fortunately, you can use the same sound memory to help lead you out of the problem. Practicing new ways of making sounds with the vocal exercises not only teaches you how to do it, but it tells the brain repeatedly, these are the sounds that I can make. This is the voice I want. And when I get off track, I can use these to get back on target. The third voice type is called the squeaky hinge. You might notice that the quality of your voice often varies. Sometimes it feels smooth, and at other times, the smooth, mellifluous tones seem to break up into tiny little particles that seem to crackle and crink like a little door hinge. I describe this sound as gravelly. You'll notice that as I speak using my gravelly voice, I seem to fall into a consistent pattern. I start out strong at the beginning of the phrase, but as I go on, the sound seems to peter out and get harsh. This tonality can actually take on a dark, even sinister edge. If I use it through the entire course of a sentence, it's about as appealing as the sound of paper being crumpled. It's problematic, too, because the process of producing it makes the vocal cords red and swollen, something that we'll learn more about later. So what's happening when we make this squeaky hinge sound? Well, it's fairly accurate to compare a voice at the beginning of a sentence with a car that's just been filled with gas. As you begin to read aloud or speak, you take a big breath, and the words start to ride out on a solid cushion of air. At that moment, the vocal cords are wonderfully content, happy little campers, vibrating beautifully and evenly. But just as a car sputters to a stop when it runs out of fuel, when you're speaking and run out of air, the cords continue to vibrate without that little air cushion. And as they do, they rub together aggressively. If you continue, they become irritated, and the voice kind of crinks to a stop. Let's do a little exercise. Close your lips and feel the vibration in the back part of your throat when you say, mm. Go ahead, try it. Now, speak out loud and tell me about the last vacation you had. Tell me where you went and what you saw, what your favorite part of the trip was, and see if you notice that same kind of vibration happening, especially at the end of your sentences. Now, try it one more time. This time holding your hand with your fingers closed towards you about a half an inch from your mouth. Pay attention to how much air you feel hitting your fingers. Remember, we were bringing our stomachs in and we were trying to get the air to hit your fingers. Well, pay attention to how much air you feel on your fingers this time. If your sentences end in that gravelly sound, you'll notice that almost no air is reaching your fingers. So try it again. Talk about your vacation again, but this time when you're speaking, try to keep a consistent flow of air hitting your fingers. When the air stops or diminishes, take another breath. Go ahead, try it. This incorrect use of voice affects a large percentage of the population. Fortunately, it's one of the easiest problems to correct. When you just get used to diaphragmatic breathing, what we learned in session 2, the problem ceases to exist. Many people are just reluctant to breathe more. We have a sense of urgency about our getting the words out, making us press on instead of pausing to refuel. But there's an acceptable middle ground, somewhere between panting and talking till we're blue in the face and gasping for air. So go back to the guidebook and write down all the names of the people you know who fall into this sound category. The fourth voice is called the Marilyn. I used to laugh all the time when I called my friend Jeff at his office and got his answering machine. He'd gotten his secretary to record a little message in this breathy Marilyn Monroe-like tones. And when she said, "Jeff can't come to the phone right now," it was kind of easy to imagine that the reason had something to do with the bedroom instead of the boardroom. I remember when I was a kid, I actually became interested in studying the effects of using the breathy side of the voice. I was in junior high. A friend and I decided to make this little documentary film at a religious retreat in the mountains. So I interviewed the monks, and I was immediately aware of how calming their light, airy voices were. They spoke so softly that the slight ticking of the sound of my camera often seemed to just drown them out. But still, somehow, they commanded attention. What is it about this kind of speaking that's so appealing? Maybe it's the vulnerability it seems to hint at. I don't know. Maybe we find it attractive. Because instead of asserting itself, it tends to kind of invite us in. I know that in more than a few instances, this quality seems useful and positive, and we choose it because we think it's the best way to convey certain qualities we want other people to sense. But some people end up breathy because of overcompensation. It's not unusual for a person who's been told that his or her voice is harsh, irritating, abrasive, or loud to swing so far back in the other direction and kind of tone it down to just absolute breathiness. The problem is, no matter how you arrive at this way of speaking, it's very hard on the vocal cords. When you speak using the Marilyn, only a small portion of the vocal cords is actually vibrating. So all this air pushes right through them, and they kind of just move out of the way and allow all that air to pass. And the result is something like windburn. Interesting fact, whispering is harder on the voice than screaming. Nobody believes that? It's true. When you're whispering, so much air is coming over the vocal cords that it dries instantly all of the moisture that's sitting on the cords, and that makes the cords red, puffy, and swollen. Screaming doesn't even dry out the cords as much as whispering. So many people go to the doctor and they have a sore throat, and the doctor says, "Rest your voice." And then they think, "Rest my voice. That must mean whisper." So then they go around for the next 3 or 4 days talking like this, and they wonder why their voice never comes back. As a matter of fact, they wonder why it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. That's because the worst thing they could possibly do is speak airy. The doctor didn't say go home and whisper. He said rest your voice. Rest your voice is not speak that much. Whisper is create windburn, dry out all the moisture on your cords, and make them red and more swollen. I want to tell you a little story about one of my students, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, and what happened to her when she lost her voice. She went to the doctor. She had a terrible throat infection. The doctor gave her all of these antibiotics and said, "Take this and take this. And by the way, for the next 2 weeks, don't speak." Now, Dr. Laura is a very specific person. When you tell her not to speak, she went out and bought a blackboard. If you told me not to speak, I might make it 10 seconds. But telling her not to speak, she was like, "No problem. I can follow directions to the T." She got herself a chalkboard. She didn't make one bit of noise for the next 2 weeks. 2 weeks rolls by. Her infection is gone. But she is suddenly afraid to make any sounds. She's thinking, "Oh my gosh, I've forgotten what I sound like. And what if I open my mouth and I make sounds and they make my throat hoarse and I get sore and I lose my voice again? What am I going to do? This is my livelihood. I am making millions of dollars a year on the radio with my voice, but I'm afraid to speak." Her husband called me and said, "My wife hasn't spoken in 2 weeks, and she's very apprehensive about starting again. Can you help her? So they came to see me. And in that first lesson, I taught her all the exercises that I'm teaching you, the googs and the gugs and the mums and the mum and the low larynx and all the things we're going to do in the daily warm-up. Suddenly, she found sounds she'd never imagined. Not only was her voice better, it was louder than it had ever been. It was brighter and crisper and stronger, and it had more colors. She was blown away. I turned her apprehension into excitement. The vocal exercises and the diaphragmatic breathing brought so much voice back into her voice that she felt completely renewed. She told me later on that before she had that session with me, she had seriously discussed with her and all of her business people that she was going to retire from radio. After that session, and over the next few months when we stayed together, and we've been together ever since for years, she's gone on to continue to be one of the top radio personalities in the nation. I'd like you to keep in mind that while you might find that breathy voice appealing, laryngitis is not appealing. So if you don't find alternatives to that way of speaking, and you think that breathy is the only way to sound sexy, approachable, gentle, or romantic, that's just not the case. A healthy voice that has command of all the sound possibilities will eventually be more than enough to seduce anyone. Go back to your guidebook and write down a list of all the people you know that are guilty of the Marilyn. The next voice is called the Big Brass. Let me ask you, what would a big band be without its horn section adding that bright, concentrated sound? Well, in the mix of vocal qualities, a little bit of brass provides a jolt of energy that can make you sound memorable. But when your voice is all brass, the effect can be just a wee bit irritating. So what do I mean by a brassy voice? Well, say the word brass, holding out the A. You do it. Brass. Well, when you do that, you have to notice that you feel that buzz in the back part of your throat. Brass. That's the sound I'm talking about. And brassiness happens when your vocal cords are vibrating so fully, like the long strings of a piano. Now, under the right circumstances, that kind of vibration is the basis of a wonderfully resonant tone. Here, however, there's not enough airflow to match all of that chord thickness. Instead, your body is kind of swallowing up the richness before it can come out. Now, making sure that the larynx stays in its normal, healthy position, not coming up, is one of the effective ways to turn down that excess brassiness of your voice. As before, you can just put your finger on your Adam's apple and kind of remind it gently to go lower, a little bit lower, to alleviate that brass sound. You put your finger on your Adam's apple, and you add a little of that Yogi Bear sound, and it'll come down. You put your finger on your Adam's apple, you add a little of that Yogi Bear sound, and it'll come down. So you're here, and you bring your larynx down. You can do it. Now, the second way to fix this problem is to make sure that there's more air coming out of your mouth when you speak. You can do the closed fingers in front of your lips exercise like we did before to feel more of that solid stream of air coming out and hitting your fingers. You need to experiment with the amount of air you push out to see just how much air is necessary to lose that brassy sound. Start out by speaking and then just try to blow more air through without getting whispery. When you've lost that brassy sound, well, then you're there. Do you understand what I mean? You start out speaking and it's here, and then you try to add a little bit more air, but you went too far if you got into the Marilyn. So don't go as far as the Marilyn. Kind of pull it back so that there's just the right amount of air hitting your fingers and you don't have too much of the big, bad brass. Who do you know that sounds like this? Back to the guidebook, write down the list, and then come back to me. The next voice is called the husky voice. Much less common than the qualities we've seen so far, but an occasional standout in the sea of troublesome vocal traits.
It's the guttural, raspy Louis Armstrong sound. Grating and often unpleasant, it's produced when the forces that produce the airy voice and the ones that produce the brassy voice come together.
For this sound to happen, your larynx has to rise and partially block your windpipe. At the same time, a tremendous amount of air must be pushed through the vocal cords. And as the excess air pushes through, it combines with any phlegm and natural moisture that might be sitting there, and together the air and the phlegm come rumbling out. This sound is a chord killer. Even demonstrating it for a few seconds, like I just did, makes my throat start to hurt, and it makes my cords start to dry and swell. But if it's your habitual sound, you probably don't even notice the constriction of your throat or the irritation of the cords. But it's a sure bet that you have a problem with hoarseness and that you more than occasionally lose your voice. If you hear even small traces of this quality in your voice when you listen to yourself back on a tape recorder, you need to concentrate on three basic things. One, pay close attention to your breathing. Learn to send even amounts of air through the cords without so much force. You can do that by making sure that your stomach is coming in slowly while you're speaking. Second, your larynx has to remain in the normal position. And we've learned how to do that. When it goes out of the normal position, we just make a little bit of that Yogi Bear sound. And third, you'll need to pay close attention to the food and the diet section of this program in order to reduce all that thick, mucusy phlegm that's in your throat to begin with. All three of these will move you out of vocal danger and away from that husky voice. Do you know anybody that sounds like this? Go ahead and write it down in your guidebook. Just remember that the only reason we've been talking about the six basic vocal types is for you to be able to identify them when you make them and when you hear other people making combinations of them. Unless we get better at hearing what we sound like, we can never ask our audience of listeners for the courtesy of actually listening to us.